Hello, everyone. Welcome to Vegas Legal Magazine Podcast. I'm Mark Fierro with Vegas Legal Magazine publisher Tyler Morgan will join us in just a moment today. We have the man of the hour, the guy Tyler and I are nominating for Las Vegas of the Year, possibly sainthood as well, State Senator Richard Las Vegans know him as Tick Sagerbloom. Unless you've been on a back ward in a coma, you know that Las Vegas and Nevada now is recreational marijuana. You should also know that Tick Sagerbloom is indeed the person who worked the issue through the legislature. Thank you so much, Senator, for being here today.
Thank you.
So where did you pick up the fight? Where do you come in, and what was the lay of the land when you started?
Well, truthfully, I came on at the right time. The voters approved it and put it in the Constitution in 2000. And for 12 years, or 11 years, I guess, we really couldn't go anywhere with it. You know, they had an initiative to make it legal. That failed a couple of times. And the legislature could never really do anything as far as having dispensaries or any kind of an actual regulated industry. So in 2013, after Washington and Colorado both passed it recreational, I took up the mantle. And that's when I pushed forward with a Colorado-type model for our medical program, thinking that if we got that going, then we could come recreational.
That, in many ways, was the keys to the city. People stopped seeing it as this demon weed that was going to whack us all out, right?
Exactly. And everyone said, oh, there's no way you can get this passed. You know, John Ralston, I remember saying, no way in hell. And truthfully, it was the emperor had no clothes. So, you know, when we got the bill going, there was no opposition. It was, you know, the police supported it, everybody, until it got to the assembly, and then the Republicans decided to make it a party issue, and we needed one Republican vote to get two-thirds vote, and Michelle Fiore, a new city council person, Michelle Fiore, you know, broke with her caucus and voted with us. And then the governor signed the bill, which is a shocker. So,
was there always this hint of partisanship underneath it?
Not to start with. I worked actually hand-in-hand with Lieutenant Governor Mark Hutchison. He and I were partners on the initial bill, and truthfully, he did more work than I did. He was fantastic. He's such a great lawyer. And so that's when we put together the issue. We went to Arizona, which had a Colorado-type model, saw how they did it, took some look around to other states, took the best of everything required. You know, everything had to be tested, which everyone complains about. So we created the best model thinking, you know, Nevada knows how to regulate vices. And really, really feel we've developed the best industry as far as letting business go with the least regulation, but making sure that all the things you need as far as making sure that everything's accounted for and nothing goes out the back door and nothing gets sold to kids or anything, we have that.
Your family has been here for generations. I got here in the late 60s. Things have really changed. This was probably the toughest state in the United States. Three seats, right? That was a felony.
Well, when I tell people, when I was going to college in California in the 60s, when you drove home, on the right there at Prim, the state line, there was a big billboard that said, warning, possession of marijuana is lifetime imprisonment.
Can you imagine?
And it got worse from there. But, you know, it's come full circle. And the reality is, you know, when we passed the bill in 2013, people were already using it. I mean, it's been out there an open secret. I've gone to concerts and, you know, 15,000 people there passing joints around. So everybody kind of looked the other way. But now, thank God, we can actually do it legally and tax it. So we're going to make some money on it.
You know, there is this underlying hope, and it sounds like it's more than hope on the part of a lot of people, our veterans. A lot of them are claiming that they've used medical marijuana to get Oxycontin out of their lives, that they just walked away from one of the most addictive drugs known. How is it that we can claim all these years that there is no medical benefit?
Well, that's what's so strange about it. Because the law schedule is one, which means there's no medical benefit, the government would never allow anyone to do research to disprove that. So it was a catch-22. You know, it's a vicious cycle. No one could ever do the research to prove it. And it was Schedule 1, so you could never get off Schedule 1. But just to show you how crazy things are, this last session, one of my bills said that we could use marijuana for opioid addiction, which seems right, so because that's what everybody's talking about, right? Dr. Hardy stood up on the floor and said, I don't believe in taking one addictive substance to get rid of another addictive substance. And the bill died. But I mean, what do they think methadone is? I mean, that's all we do is use one addictive substance. Not that marijuana is addictive, but the truth is, for people that have opioid addiction, even if they don't get off of it, they use a lot less when they have marijuana too, which of course is not harmful like everything else. So it's a great drug in that sense.
Well, you know, when you and I was never aware of this until I read the book Dreamland. But when you talk about opioid addiction, you're not talking about hundreds of thousands of people are addicted. You're talking about millions and millions of lives, the lives which are going to be destroyed. You can't live forever taking opioids. It just doesn't work that way.
Right. Well, and we as a country have been pill pushers on that industry. But, you know, in 2013, the same year I did this bill, I did a bill that because so many people that I knew were having their parents or themselves or their children, a lot of them, were getting addicted. They would go into rehab. They would spend $30,000, come out, go back in. They were bankrupting their families. So I had a bill that said that people who were addicted on these pills could sue their doctor or the manufacturer to just pay for the rehabilitation costs. The doctors came out of the woodwork. Oh, my God, you can't do this. And then they started testifying that they have people that they've just literally addicted. You know, they just come in once a month or every 2 months, and they give them a supply, and out the door they went. That was just common practice.
It's nobody had a problem with that.
No, and if we look at the research, it was never intended to be a long-term use. It was intended for short-term pain. But anyway, the whole thing is just insane. And we have to actually go back and sue the manufacturers like they sue the tobacco companies and reap some of the billions and billions of dollars of societal cost that opioid addictions cost that those drug companies knew about.
To put your political hat on for a moment, are we getting to the point, because obviously there was such acceptance in Nevada in particular, but in these other states as well, have we arrived at the point where people who are running for federal office, running for the House, running for the United States Senate, that they're going to have to take a position on changing Schedule 1 or they simply won't get elected?
As far as marijuana? I'm not sure about the technical, what they have to support or not support. But I will say this, for example, Jackie Rosen, Congresswoman Rosen, she publicly supported Question 2 in the last election. She was the only big-time politician, frankly, that did that. And to her credit, she just said, I support it. And obviously, that did not stop her from winning. You know, Congresswoman Titus has been very active on the Hill. She's part of the Marijuana Caucus back there, been very helpful. Senator Keewan was with me when we first passed the bill. He was in the state Senate. Now he's a congressman. Without him, we wouldn't have passed the marijuana bill. So we have three Democrats there who are very progressive on marijuana, and I think it's a winning issue. I mean, I think you get 2 points just by saying openly you support legalization and the use of marijuana.
I was glad to hear this. When I initially called you to be on the podcast, one of the names that popped up right away in your mind was Chris G, and you gave her a tremendous amount of credit for getting to where we are today. What role did she play early on?
Yeah, she really is the godmother of the whole thing, because after the initiative, put it in the Constitution, she stepped forward and on two separate occasions spearheaded a ballot initiative to try to get recreational marijuana in Nevada. And one time they lost by about 4 points. This was back in the 2000s. And then in the legislature, she kept trying. So she's really the one who, more than any other politician, has just stepped forward and said, this is crazy, we need to do something, and just legalize it. So I cannot say enough about her.
You know, I never would have guessed in a million years, that it would be a Republican governor who moved rather deftly to once you put that $70 million out there in front of a bunch of legislators that are always cash starved. We don't have, their hands are tied in regards to raising taxes. There is no income tax here, one of the great things about the state. But as soon as he used that $70 million and waved it out there, this pretty much started looking like a done deal at that point.
Oh, absolutely. But no, you can't give Brian Sandoval enough credit. Because, you know, he publicly opposed Question 2 last November, but when he saw 55% supported, he flipped totally. You know, and say the state came out and in his budget, he said, I want to put an excise tax on this and raise $70 million. And then, you know, this Question 2 was supposed to be implemented in January of 2018. He actually asked his tax department to implement it 6 months early, which is unheard of. All these other states that have passed initiatives with deadlines, Massachusetts and other states, they're actually having to take longer. We're 6 months early. And now, you know, we have this issue about the distribution and the distributor and not getting enough out there. He's come up
with emergency
regulations to take care of it. It's like, geez, Sandoval, you are just the greatest.
A guy with his eyes open. And I like to think, you know, if you listen to what Republicans say, you know, less government is better. The idea that the government shouldn't be in the business of stopping us from doing things that don't hurt us. Well, in the absence of all evidence, after all of these years, that this does anything, I can't imagine the Republicans would try to put that up. But to his credit, one, he listened to the people, and it's like he got his marching orders. It's like he said, this day is coming. This is the state that legalized gambling. We do things here that people don't do in other states. And he wasn't the first mover, but to his credit, he was in that second round. He made sure Nevada was part of it.
Absolutely. And frankly, the casino industry has been very supportive by not opposing it, because obviously they can kill anything in Nevada. And the fact that they were willing to take a hands off and say, you know, we don't have a dog in this fight, but go forward, has been very helpful, because that was my biggest fear, is they were going to say, no, we don't want it. But
didn't the casinos actually come in and support the consumption licenses or the future for lounges and stuff?
Not in Carson City, but here in Las Vegas, where the Clark County Commission put together a task force on that. Yeah, and the leader was the guy from the Venetian.
Yeah, Adelson. I think he was active in trying to help promote, you know, doing the consumption licenses so that people would be more inclined to just keep it out of the hotels safely and stay in the dispensaries and stuff and smoke it. Yeah.
And he spent $3 million fighting the question.
Yeah.
And in Florida, he spent more than that. So, I mean, the guy is adamantly opposed to it, but I guess when it comes to business, you know, end of the day, everybody wants to make money.
Pragmatic is good.
Money talks. It does.
And so I'm not sure if he was trying to promote it or just wanted to get it off the strip. But either way, yeah, I'll take his support.
I know that this other shoe is going to drop, and it's going to drop very, very quickly. We're an economy. We are a legislature. We're an executive that caters or is at least mindful of the needs to tourists. Right now, tourists can come to Las Vegas, flock to Las Vegas, buy recreational marijuana, but if they smoke at any place, they're a criminal.
$600 fine.
So how do you fix it? Two, how quickly can it be fixed now that the legislature doesn't meet for another couple of years?
Well, that's one of the things I'm working on. But that's what when I had my bill that would allow this consumption lounges, I said, you know, how can you put $70 million in your budget that you're going to raise from tourists, go around the world telling people to come here and buy it, and then say, oh, by the way, there's no place you can legally use it. But, you know, people just said, no, we're going to put our head in the sand and let's worry about that. But actually, in talking to the Legislative Council, they think that local governments do have the legal authority without my bill. So I've asked them to write an opinion, which I'm waiting on any second, which if they get it, then it'll be really up to the City Council and the County Commission. But that little task force we talked about, they had come up with some proposals where basically each dispensary would have a location near or next to them where you could buy the dispensary and then use it in that location. And it'll evolve. You know, I was at, there's a place called Top Golf. I don't know if you've been there.
Yes.
But I was there last night. I'd never seen the thing in my life. But, I mean, talk about a venue. I mean, they have each floor. You could block off a floor for 21. People go in there, you know, have parties. I mean, this town is so perfect for parties with marijuana or cannabis involved. It's just hard to believe.
The other thing is that I don't think the public understands. I went into a dispensary over the weekend to check it out and kind of see what's going
on. For a friend.
Yeah. And I was able to talk to the the people behind the counter and stuff and start learning about the product. And it's interesting how much knowledge is put into each product and how much they're able to direct you to products and tell you, you know, the purpose of each product and whether this is something that is safe for you or you should do and how to use it and so forth. So the idea of the fear of people, you know, all running to dispensaries, getting stoned and jumping in their cars and driving off and getting into accidents and causing chaos in the streets isn't really as much of a reality once you actually walk into the dispensary and talk to the people in there, because they are very adamant about directing you to, you know, here's like a beginner's product, here's, you know, something for extreme pain and things like that. And it was exceptional, the service and the knowledge.
The people that work there are very committed. A lot of them have had use over the years, but they know everything and they're happy to share it and they love it. I mean,
you've it's never, like talking to a pharmacist. Yeah. I mean, they know the product, the ins and outs of it. And
but more importantly, they've used the product. So the pharmacist says, well, this says this, this says that. This guy says, the bud tender says, you know, I've used this and here's what I use this for and here's what I do.
I had one guy say, oh, I'd give this to my mother. You know, she doesn't use anything, but if she wanted to, this would be fine for her. She could be at home and she'd be fine. And I thought that was incredible.
Yeah, well, it is such a fun industry too. That it makes an old person like me just feel young again.
Well, you know, I feel this tremendous pride. I just feel like all of a sudden the state just grew up all of a sudden. And irrespective if you ever smoke pot for the rest of your life, never have anything to do with it. Just the idea that you said, "Oh yeah, this is America. You can't stop people from doing what they want to do as long as it doesn't hurt anybody else and doesn't interfere in business or anything else." It just seems
we're the new progressive state.
Yeah,
well, just, we are. But I said, California, Oregon, Washington, and then Nevada. When I see us as part of that group. A lot of people see us as part of Utah, Arizona, you know, Idaho. But no, we're definitely progressive and become much more progressive.
Even Reno.
Reno's.
You could walk through Reno 10 years ago. They didn't want to build or do or have anything. And now they've become this network, this hub of young people, big brains. Real estate development is going on. There are a lot of people from California, and that was a solid R. The whole city was a solid R, and it's simply not anymore.
Yeah. And I think a lot of what's happened is seeing, you know, they're tied to the Bay Area. The fact that we do now have gay marriage and marijuana, things like that, a lot of the people in the Bay Area don't think of Nevada as this wasteland or some bunch of cowboys. So they see us as part of them, which is really helpful. And that more that synergy develops, then it just becomes expands on itself. But no, Washoe County is actually now a toss-up state. I mean, a toss-up county. It used to be Washoe County. If you're running statewide, a Democrat, you know, you lose by 100,000 votes. You thought you were doing good.
Yep. And I would urge anybody's, any family out there, and I went to UNLV, graduated from UNLV. UNLV is my school. But if you're thinking about other places to send your kids, look at UNR. Go visit the campus, because what the legislature has backed up there is phenomenal.
Yeah, it is the bargain of the century up there.
So one of the things we had a gentleman in last week. He has a tour bus. Takes you from one place.
420 bus?
Yeah. Takes you to the next place. Takes you to the next place. Takes you to the next place. And can't make a dollar. They're stopping business. Why? Because we now have this law that you can't smoke any. So for people like that, there are a lot of people who are waiting in the wings to start their businesses. If you were a betting man, when would you say that the cities would at least have the ability to take up the issue? And
well, as I said, if I get that letter, it could be tomorrow. But I guarantee you, I shouldn't say guarantee, but I believe, for example, if I'm elected to the city council, the county commission in 2018, 2019, all this stuff is going to be legal. I mean, people come to me every day. They want to do a hotel. They want to do a bus. They want to do a bread and breakfast. They want to do a little Amsterdam street. They want to do a bar. They want to have a restaurant. You know, I don't know if you saw the thing on or listened to the thing on KMPR the other day, but they have a dinners in Napa where with each course, including with the wine, they give you a different kind of marijuana to.
Really?
Yeah. Actual grown-ups. Yeah. This is amazing where this can go.
and smoke.
Yeah, and you know, as long as you don't drive to the location. But, you know, people drive to bars all the time. No one says, oh, you shouldn't be able to drive to the bar. But it's like, oh, if you drive to a pot lounge, oh, my God, what are we going to do?
Well, now that we've got Uber, I think that's a moot point as well.
Exactly. It's just, but that's so perfect. In Vegas, you can come here and never have to drive your own car. You can go anywhere you want to do, the best restaurants, the best entertainment, everything. And it just seems to me that this is another compliment to that if you like it. If you don't, then don't use it.
Another thing that's kind of screwing things up is kind of adding to the shortage is the inability to do greenhouses down here, which was something that was kind of didn't really make too much sense. Up in Carson City, they can have greenhouses and up north, but then down here, they can't grow them. So there's a lot of cultivators down here that they would otherwise be growing and providing a lot of product for the market down here, but the cost of putting, you know, concrete tilt-up buildings and everything has gotten too costly and stuff. And a lot of people, I think, are waiting in hopes that, you know, greenhouses will come through so they can, you know, produce at a much lesser cost. But do you have anything on that as far as what the status is on that or kind of what's going on with
it's,
that?
It's really county option and the state will allow it. But it also, you'll find that in these contained buildings, which they're doing now, it's much easier for them to control everything. Once we get beyond this first couple of years, they may go back to greenhouses. But for now, because everything is tested to the nth degree. If there's one bite, you know, your whole thing, you lose a, $10,000 or $100,000 worth of product. So that, if you talk to them right now, most of the growers are really happy with the system given how it works. But ultimately, it is crazy in the sunshine capital of the world, you know, to have greenhouses inside instead of using the sun.
Yeah, the sunniest place on earth. We're sunnier than Saudi Arabia, if anybody's wondering, doing the
Kenya. But you know, the other thing is we could put on the top of the things, put solar cells, and use that to power the...
Will there come a time that individuals, that people will be able to simply pay a license to grow their own, a limited number of plants?
I'm not sure. I'm sure at some point there will come that time. But for right now, we're trying to get rid of the black market. And one of the things the police tell you is because we have had home grows that they show up someplace, they don't know if it's legitimate or not legitimate. If it's 12 plants or it's 20 plants, So anyway, it's been a real problem for the cops. And so not allowing them makes it easier. But at some point, it's like making your own beer, right? I mean, if you want to have a couple of plants, you ought to be able to do it.
Let's put this in perspective. Fortune, I saw this on Fortune Live. Sin City's latest vice is turning into a crowd favorite statewide. Legal recreational marijuana sales in Nevada generated $3 million in sales revenue, roughly $500,000 in tax revenue in their first 4 days, according to Nevada Dispensary Association. That puts the state on track to pull in sales of $30 million by the next 6 months. People lined up for 3 hours when it went on sale July 1. Think about this for a second. All of that money stayed out of the pockets of the cartels. That's the single most important revenue source, far beyond what cocaine is. So it goes into the state coffers, and part of it ends up in law enforcement. We end up with money going to the good guys instead of some of the worst people on earth.
Yeah, and the bud tenders we're talking about, they're making $15-$20 an hour. They're getting health insurance.
And they're the happiest employees in the state right now.
Yep.
Yeah. So, I mean,
the most popular, too.
Yeah.
Now, for an industry that has no government subsidy, it's got thousands of jobs, hundreds of millions of dollars have been invested, and lots of happy people. And gets rid of the black market and all that criminal activity which goes along to it. Because as soon as you buy something that's illegal, then you're a crook. So it starts a vicious cycle. So no, it's you can't say enough about it being a win-win. And I like getting credit for it, even though obviously it's not just me. But I will say I've been involved.
And I will say this, that all things considered, Nevada's approach has been the cleanest. It looks like these places are national firms. I mean, they've really, really done their homework, and I'm sure that has to do with having to go through a lot of hurdles with the legislature and you.
Yeah. Now, when we created the law, there's a lot of complaints because it was so tight and everything had to be tested and everything, but now that it's actually up and running, everybody appreciates the fact that we are the gold standard. And other states, if you look at it, they had medical programs, then they went to recreational. There was a mess when they flipped. When we flipped, I'll just flip a switch on the cash register and add 10 cents.
And that was also a brilliant stroke at the last minute to be able to use the inventory for both sides and simply apply a tax differently. That made so much more sense. That could have been a nightmare.
Exactly. No, that's the main thing we did in the legislature was we combined the two tax structures so that it's just one product. Because in Colorado, you go in, they have two counters, two sets of books. They have to have grow plants with two different places. It's a mess.
When the dust cleared on this, did Nevadans, albeit wealthy Nevadans, did Nevadans get their fair share of the pie? Or I know there was a lot of out of state influences that were at the table.
No, they own it, but truthfully, they've I'm sure a lot of them regretted it because they have invested hundreds of millions and no one's made a penny so far. Now I think the valuation's got up to the point where most of them could probably turn around and sell it to a Canadian company or some out-of-state company and make some money. But to their credit, they have invested a fortune and literally just hung on by their fingernails. If this thing had waited 6 more months, I'm not sure everyone would have survived because it's the medical. We had 25,000 cards. That's just enough medical patients to sustain the industry that we built.
What was was there an anticipated number when the medical went through that? Did the state think that there was going to be a surge to like 50,000 medical cards? Or
I would have said there'd be 100,000 by now.
100,000 medical cards?
Yeah.
It's almost as if everybody just said, it'll be legal eventually. No, we're not going to spend our money and go get medical cards.
Well, not only that, and I've heard this over and over and over again, is that a lot of the people that are of that age who would have gotten cards are professionals. They're making a lot of money, and they didn't want other driver's license. They didn't want the association. They didn't want writing their names down. They didn't know what the feds were going to do. Yeah. They didn't. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I never got a card, you know, because I don't want to be labeled as some kind of disabled person or have my name in a database that who knows where it's going to go. So, yeah, I mean, I firmly resisted that. There's also, people didn't realize, there's a lot of ways you can get a card from California.
Yeah.
If you have a passport, so there's a big there are firms here where you go on the internet with your passport and you talk to a doctor in California, they email you or fax you the thing, and then you go down with your passport and your California thing doesn't show up and buy it. So there's a lot of people like that too.
I know that doctors right now, left and right, are now that it's recreational, when people undergo surgery, the doctor is saying, I gave you this many thises, Valiums, or whatever the heck else they give you. If you want to, a lot of people are getting some real benefit out of marijuana. You might want to try that as well. It's legal. You can just go down. You don't have to sign anything. And doctors are saying it left and right. And they should have been saying it all along. But for your work, we'd still be in the corner making believe. I guess the boogeyman in the room, the ceiling here. And every time I look at this, it's just kind of a showstopper. Went to the DEA website. Schedule 1 drugs, this is a direct quote, Schedule 1 drugs have a high potential for abuse and the potential to create severe psychological and or physical dependence. And Schedule 1 drug substances or chemicals are defined as drugs with no currently accepted medical use and a high tolerance for abuse. It just sounds... sounds so strange. High potential.
Well, for that was they were put on Schedule 1 by Nixon, and there's actual transcripts showing them talking. And the reason they wanted to go after blacks and hippies.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, it had nothing to do with anything.
I think it was Haldeman. And at the end of the interview in Harper's, he said, "Did you know that this was all a bunch of baloney?" And he goes, "Absolutely."
Yeah. And you go back to the 30s when they made it illegal. It was because of Latinos. You know, they wanted to stigmatize the Mexican American population. And so they call it marijuana and tied it, and you know, then the reefer madness, and these African American and brown men are going to take your women and all this.
They're going to go crazy and rape everybody inside.
All this racism, the more you know about it, and you look back at the thousands of years it's been used, it just blows your mind.
Are we going to have
to? But the fact is that here we are, you know, within a week. The first time in our lives that actually we can go buy it legally and use it. I mean, how amazing is that?
So what is the next step as far as the Fed? Is it going to take another administration? Is it going to take a change in the House, a change in the Senate? Is it going to take all of the above? I think probably
the next Democratic president will unilaterally reduce the schedule. But it's unbelievable how far the politicians are behind the curve on this. That's my experience. You know, I've been out front and everybody's like, well, how can you say that? No one's ever said boo to me about this. I mean, people love it. But politicians are scared of their shadow and they just are still very, very timid about it. And then you have a guy like Jeff Sessions, you know, the Attorney General of the country, who's openly said this thing is worse than heroin. It's like, Jeff, what's up with that?
Yeah, it's not until we can actually start really testing it under federal guidance and stuff that we can really start using it for cures and stuff. Because, you know, there's going to be far more benefit down the road medically than there is just from the money coming in for recreational and stuff. I mean, this is all great and everything, but we're still missing the ball because we need to go federal, because once we can actually have the scientists and people experimenting with it and testing it and putting data together, we're going to find out that it cures all kinds of diseases and ailments and everything. And, you know, then the rest of our lives are so much better.
Yeah. And it started. I mean, it did. But I had the FDA gave out their first permit to study marijuana. It was a professor out of there. She wasn't a professor. She was a psychiatrist out of Phoenix who was, I think she was actually hooked up with the University of Arizona at the time. Anyway, she got this study permit and then came up here, and I took her to UNLV because I said this would be perfect for Nevada. You know, let's let them be the host institution. They wouldn't touch it. So, I mean, it's not even just you know, everybody is just afraid of the boogeyman. I was shocked. Well, this would be so perfect for Nevada, and here's an education institute. She brings her own funding. She had, you know, several million dollars worth of money, and although we think it's fake science.
There's the one thing that comes with the Fed's insistence on this door slammed is no banks will, that's the most important, no banks will cross that threshold. It's like the old days in the 80s when the casinos, you couldn't get a casino renovated with banking money. There was no banking money. It was Teamsters money, and we all know how horrible that went.
Built the dunes.
That's right. And just about every other place that you could point at back
the
then. Yeah, had the DI and most of the places downtown. We may be 4 years away from a sea change. Is that what you're telling us at the federal level?
Yeah, but slowly they're building up a little constituency in Congress. But I think until the president is willing to openly do stuff, they're probably going to be too timid. But just like Nevada, once it goes, you pull the finger out of the dike and the thing's going to blow. So that's why I want to get us out there early, because once it blows, then it's not going to be as exciting. You know, why go to Las Vegas to use it when you can use it in Kansas? Yes. And we have this. We got to capitalize on this and make us the. When people think of marijuana, they need to think of Las Vegas.
Yeah.
I think that's already starting to happen already in the world. Denver's already history. And Amsterdam's history is not after 1 week. So give us a year, and it's going to be crazy. But you know, they have those mobile billboards going up and down the strip with their marijuana signs on them. I mean, we are so perfect for this industry because we know how to sell sex and the sizzle, and that's what this is.
It definitely is that dark underbelly, just a little bit different from your sleepy little boring lives at home. Come to Las Vegas and hit it out of the park.
And
for
you
weekend.
Know, they have marijuana massages. I'm thinking, you know, go to the spa and Caesars, and down there it says Swedish massage and Hot Rock massage and then marijuana massage.
There you go.
And what are people going to want to do? They're going to say, fuck the rocks.
Yeah, that's right. Get rid of this.
Tape, are we?
No, not to worry. We can say whatever the hell we want to say. Yeah, I do have in the big picture. In the big picture, and this is another thing that I saw in Fortune, and when I immediately made me think of what people have said, there was a term of art that they used, and I thought it was so interesting because it reveals something. They're called DNDs, daily and near daily users, and they're saying that number has increased rather dramatically now that it's legal and acceptable. And I'm wondering about that. If you have any concerns there. And secondly, I have a real concern about edibles. I just know it is a completely different drug. What's your take?
Well, with respect to the daily users, you know, like alcohol, there's always going to be people who use it, abuse it, and we have to make sure that people are free to come forward and acknowledge that and have programs available to them. You know, that's no different. But the flip side is, compared to an alcoholic, the guy that uses marijuana every hour, liver's never going to go out. I mean, they're not going to kill themselves from marijuana use. I mean, their brain may be a little bit hazy.
Mushy.
But
what were we talking about? Number two was...
But anyway, so the reality is it is something we need to watch out for. But, you know, people do a lot of what they call now microdosing, or you have a vape pen and you take a puff now and then, and a lot of people just do it lunchtime. They're stressed out, they have a puff at lunch. Well, it, whatever works. I mean, as long as you're able to do your job, we shouldn't be telling people what to do. With respect to edibles, that the biggest concern there is people that don't know what they're doing coming in and taking, instead of taking the one dose, they take 10 doses. And there's gonna, but you haven't heard any stories yet, but I'm sure there's gonna be a lot of people going to the emergency room. But now they've learned that if you take CBD, which is the non-psychoactive point of it, it brings you down right away. So, and the bud tenders, if you talk to them, but the bud tenders will tell you that. When you're in there buying edibles, they'll say, you know, maybe you want to buy a little thing here with CBD too, and in case you start to get weirded out, pop some of this. So, I mean, they've become so sophisticated, it's unbelievable.
That is amazing, and very, very high hope. So tell us, give us the lay of the land. Where do you go from here politically? And I'm interested in hearing about what happens with the rest of your career. You're the guy. You could get elected Pope right now.
Well, not to brag, but when on the night of it went legal, they had, at the Reef Dispensary at midnight, they had a big ceremony and fireworks and everything, and I was we arranged it ahead of time, but I was the first buyer. And they videoed me, and they made a little video they put on Facebook. That hit it. That view has had 1.6 million views.
Oh, wow.
And there's only 2 million people in the state of Nevada.
I watched it. I'm one of them. I didn't realize that many views.
But 1.6 million, so you can tell. But anyway, this is clearly my 15 minutes of fame, and I hopefully I'll remember that. But so I kind of found out something else to do. But I'm hopefully running. You know, I'm in the state senate. I've got four. I just was elected. So I got 4 years. Midterm, my commissioner, county commissioner, Christian Kiliani, is termed out. I'm going to run for her seat next year, 2018.
I'm so glad to hear that.
First, I'd like to do that because I think it's a great job, and I've learned a lot at the state level, but I want to kind of try to implement it because we pass laws, we never get to see them in operation. And also, she has the strip. I mean, hopefully I can use my knowledge to work on these pot lounges and how we evolve in the use of it all. But also, you know, we've got growth issues. We got all kinds of things that I've always been talking about over the years. So for me, it's very cool. But that'll be my swan song. I'm 69 in a couple of weeks here, and after that, it's time for... old politicians need to die at some point. Although I have to say, pot has rejuvenated me. I don't know whether it's smoking it or just being around it, but it
could have a few more terms in you.
It's nice to have a win, a hit out of the park win, and you definitely got that
exactly.
Here.
And you know, again, I mean, just when you think about it, and where we started in all our lives, and it's in the '60s, it was kind of like we could see legalization maybe, and then when Reagan got in there, it just went the other way, and went, and now just all of a sudden, bam. It's there. What an amazing thing.
Well, I will say this, you know, in politics, there are people who walk in, you know, unscratched because nobody wants to run against them. But you have to have a pretty big name to do that. I would put you in that strata. I mean, it's going to be very interesting to see if anybody's got the guts to take an ass whipping from Dick Sagerbloom because that's what's going to happen. I'm here to tell you.
Yeah.
Well, the good news is it's a very Democratic district, so it's a Democratic primary. So I think the pot use and the pot issue won't be as negative as it could be. But I assume some of you come out and say, oh, the guy's a pothead and whatever. But
let them.
Yeah.
And everybody will ride you around on their shoulders. Yeah. Okay, so you brought up the big name. Where does Chris go after this? Let's hear.
Well, I shouldn't share this, and so you didn't hear it directly from me, but I'm pretty confident she's going to run for governor. She's talked... Everybody's been talking to her about different things, and I think that's her goal in life is to be the governor of Nevada. She really feels that she can do a good job there. She knows the issues. She's one of the smartest politicians in the state. Knows
she
everything.
Is.
She knows
that.
Does her homework. Has been around, and so that's her commitment to try to run.
Wow.
I think, but she hasn't officially announced, so I'm not going to lower her cover.
Where do you hear the what do you hear happening in the congressional seats? That sounds like a big kind of circle of fame.
Well, that's one thing I haven't heard is somebody running in District 2, or is it District 3? The one in Henderson.
Yes, yeah. Because she's running for Senate.
Rosen just announced she's leaving. So, yeah, I'm surprised that you know, I'm sure they're behind the scenes. Democrats are jockeying, but no name that I've heard of has surfaced. Because that's a tough seat, but it's certainly a winnable seat. And with Trump in the presidency, I think we definitely have to fight for that.
I think that there's a possibility, you know, with what Democrats need is that turnout button. They just need that extra engine. And with this White House, they have that. There's so much to take advantage of right now.
Exactly. I mean, we're going to still have to do our voter registration, get out the vote, but people are going to be motivated. And that's the problem. You know, 2014, we just got killed, but we didn't have anybody running for the governor. And there was no motivation, no excitement, and the turnout just wasn't there. And low turnout, we get killed.
And his swan song, Harry Reid, went out real strong. He wrapped up every single name that he could in the entire state. All these people that magically won, the magic was Harry Reid.
Yeah, well, that's another thing. Having him gone, what's it going to do? But you know, his fingers are still maybe not visible, but he's still involved, which is good.
Is he still the kingmaker? Is he still the person who decides you can go, you better not?
Well, we'll see, but he's clearly behind Jackie Rosen. So, you know, if Dina Titus jumps in, then he's not the kingmaker anymore. But
she doesn't listen to Harry a lot,
no,
does she?
they have a history of disagreeing. But and to her credit, she's the number one Democrat in the state with her seniority and everything else. But I hope she doesn't run because she's such a good place now, guaranteed seat.
Forever.
Yeah, she's got the seniority. She can really be a powerhouse, which we haven't had in the Congress for a long time.
And if they make the switch and magically take over the majority, that's a beautiful place to be.
Oh, absolutely. And Nevada needs somebody in the House of Representatives. Joe Rubin, I think, can be there the rest of his life, too, if he wins this election, if he wants to stay there. But he may have bigger aspirations, so... So, no, to me, Dina's right where she should be, right where we want her to be. But it's her right to run what she wants to run for, And if she does, I'd put my money on her.
With that, we will call it a day. The Vegas Legal Magazine podcast. I want to thank you, State Senator Tick Sagerbloom, soon to be County Commissioner Tick Sagerbloom. We'll start the coronation process.
No, let's not do that. Let's you got to run fair and square and win. But I am optimistic and I'm working hard.
Tyler Morgan, publisher of Vegas Legal Magazine. Thanks for doing the good work, bringing new life to the legal community in Southern Nevada. Jeff Haney, vice president of Fiero Communications, the friendliest marketing firm in Las Vegas. And for all of you out there with a story idea, an axe to grind, get a hold of Vegas Legal, the leading magazine in Southern Nevada legal marketing. Call Tyler at
702-222-3476.
Reach out. Tell us. Tell your friends. Have a good one. We are out of here.